podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
All right, lads, it is the weekender from the Anfield Wrap, a weekend when it is apparently coming home. We'll talk about what it is and whether we're bothered about it in a bit. But I've got Sean Bennett, Mike Kearney and John Gibbons to do that. Middle bits, we've got Reece Jane on Liverpool FC's plans to support the city's Pride celebrations. And we've got Sanjay Bhandari from Kick It Out, who is a very good lad. But we're going to start with it. Mike, were you always a Three Lions tub thumper? Or are you Scouse not English and firmly among the Alberto Aquilani ultras for the final on Sunday?
Just not asked.
Somewhere in the middle.
I like the lads. I think Anderson sounds, you know, obviously there's a lot of England players who are really, really sound fellas. So I'll probably be a little bit, isn't that a shame for them if they don't win? But majorly just like, you know what, I don't really care. That might be a little bit of a like, because I think I would prefer Italy just to nick it, you know. After all this, like, oh, it's coming home, they've made the final, they're made up. I think they sort of underestimated Denmark a little bit, the fans, that is, not the players.
Team the Sainer then, yeah?
Yeah.
You're talking yourself into it, mate.
I'll talk myself into it. No, I will have an Andrea the Sainer mask by Sunday.
Balotelli shirt on and all, guys. I mean, Sean, there's another place to be with all this, which is maybe gingerly getting aboard a bandwagon, because there is one. But equally, you might be grimacing that who's on that bandwagon.
That's it. We were saying it earlier, weren't we? Like, the team and the manager are quite hard not to like.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've done well. And obviously, with Henderson being in the team, it's just the other stuff around it. I think that becomes a bit divisive. But, yeah, I'm the same as Mike. Pretty indifferent. It'll be a good game. I've got Italy in my sweep. So, either way, you know, if Hendo wins it, great. If Italy win it, I'll be in the money and we'll all be going on the aisle.
Yeah, there is a Henderson thing, isn't there, John? Because obviously he is sound, as has been mentioned. It'd be good to watch him make some history, because he would be the first man from this country to win the Premier League, the Champions League, the World Club Cup and the Euros, which, you know, wouldn't be a bad haul for a man who runs funny.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, I mean, it'll be some career, won't it? And hopefully many more to come. Certainly from a Liverpool point of view. Hopefully, you know, he won't be done after that. But it'll be a wonderful achievement for him. And, you know, around the 10 years of Hendo at Liverpool thing, you know, obviously we put out the player profiles thing that we did. You know, there's quite a few documentaries out and about. The club did a really good one. Redman have put loads out as well. It did obviously get you thinking about, you know, how far he has come in his career and what he's had to, you know, go through. And to be fair, that's general sort of throughout the squad. I know that those who support, you know, the English pyramid system, which includes me, but the vocal ones online, you know, always like to point out just how many of this squad have played league football and made their starts, you know, at championship level or even sort of lower down that. And you look at the centre-half partnership last night as a really good, you know, example of that, really, starting a sort of, you know, very unfashionable sort of Yorkshire clubs and sort of going from there. And so I think there's good stories throughout this squad, as the others have said. You know, they seem like good humans as well, and so you wouldn't necessarily, you know, begrudge them it now. But then the Italians seem quite sound as well, and everyone loves Fiali.
Chiellini's mad, isn't he? See the night.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, with that. Yeah. The pen as well.
The other fella didn't know what to do with him, did he?
No. The other thing with it, Mike, is that you can. I'm currently feeling a bit like this now. You can feel a bit Scroogey and a bit Grinchy if you're not getting involved, sort of thing. I mean, I've been watching the whole tournament, including England, and I've enjoyed the fact that there's footy on, and it's been a good tournament, and it's been interesting, and, you know, Sam Matterface aside, I've enjoyed the media coverage of it, largely.
Well, everyone's got the day off today, haven't they? Because he told them.
Well, let's do that, go on. Let's do the commentary, because it was wild, wasn't it? I mean, it was like, you know, I don't get... I mean, Clive Tilsley, friend of the show and all that, but him and McCoist have been brilliant. Like, really, you know... Get a love of the football comes across when you listen to them too, and you think these two would be a great pint, all of that. And I know I don't mind Lee Dixon in normal circumstances, but I feel like Matterface brought him down and then was awful himself, particularly towards the end of the extra time when it was as though he wanted to say something that would be remembered forever. You know, he wanted to do, you know, there are people on the pitch or whatever. And none of them were hitting home at all this shit about, you know, tell the kids they don't ever have to go to bed and you can have the work, you can have the day off work tomorrow. Fucking who are you? Imagine ringing into work, Sam Matterface said I can have the day off. Fuck off.
I think you said there, didn't you? He's after this memorable line.
Yeah.
And the memorable lines only happen because the spur of the moment.
Mm.
Sort of thing like, as you know, they think it's all over. That was that. Everyone, that's the first one, really, people hark back to. Well, it's just like spur of the moment. There's no chance he sat down last night, wrote it, and thought, like, oh, I'll say this at this time if this happens. That's what it feels like Matterface does. And it's just, oh, it's just like, come on, lad. Just enjoy yourself a bit more instead of like being, you know, pure up all night with a stiff neck, looking at your paper, writing these lines out, like all sorts of like things on his sheet. He's got about 50 notebooks. Him going, well, if England go 1-0 up, I'll say this.
Insight onto Matterface's neck.
I'm just glad he said neck.
he's just a triad, isn't he? That's the word you're looking for. He's a triad, and you know he might be all right away from all of it, but. You know, just it doesn't come across as if like he's just natural. Just be natural about it, and people might enjoy your commentary. But I just can't get on board with all that shite. And did you hear him saying about watching on ITV? Watching on ITV because it's a superstition. I was like, nah, mate. I will actually be watching it on the BBC or just like with the radio commentary as well. Because generally, the pundits are quite crap. And like, I was actually really enjoying Roy Keane last night because he was absolutely hating it and just kept going, you haven't won yet. You haven't won yet. And everyone else is going, yeah, but come on, Roy. And like, Roy Keane's just standing there looking at them going, nah, you haven't won yet.
Yeah, the being the contrary fella only takes you so far though, Sean. And you know, like there's it's just come up there, 27.6 million people watching on the telly. Oh. There's you know, the stadium itself is three quarters full. You know, we had reports this morning when I was coming into work, like, you know, various people who run pubs say, you know, it's fantastic people coming back out again to the pubs and watching this and all that. So like I said to Mike, it's, you know, it's hard to stick to the grinchy stuff. I'm doing my best.
See the beads of sweat dripping down your face there. No, it is. Like, I thought, I've never in my lifetime remembered Wembley being that bouncing, yeah. Albeit it does kind of feel like a concert versus like a proper tribal, you know, everyone's at each other's next stadium. But that's fine. That's international footy, isn't it? But I enjoyed it. I think going that long without seeing fans, like, I think even when I watched one of the Everton games when they had 2,000 fans back in, I was crying my eyes out because I was like, oh my God, I just want to be back in. So it's a nice occasion, you know. I work with a lot of people around the country, loads of them weren't even on our call this morning, so I think they had a good time yesterday, and fair enough, I did exactly the same when we won the league, so you've got to let them have something, haven't you? Especially a lot of the teams who, you know, they're supporting little towns, they haven't really got big clubs to follow, so it's amazing, really, to get and see them players, isn't it?
Little pass on there.
All the Grimsby fans out there.
What's been interesting to me has been the makeup of the crowd, and it's something I'm going to talk to Sanjay about, actually, because I know he was there, and I don't know whether it's because it's all been a bit last minute and because, you know, they've sold tickets a little bit differently, but it does feel like the crowd is very much not the Club England kind of normal thing. You know, it's it feels very diverse, it feels sort of different, really. And you know, there isn't that kind of like, oh, I want to fucking batter this fella in that band, shut up with that trumpet, you know what I mean, or the Beef Eaters and all that. It seems to be replaced by, you know, just normal people who just like love footy and are loving it. And I think that sort of helps you. And there was a video I shared it before, the Match of the Day put up of a little girl who gets Mason Mount's shirt at the end, and she's just, her face is just like beaming, and you're like, that's boss, you know what I mean? And like, maybe people like that were always at England games, I don't know, but you don't necessarily, they're not the ones the camera goes to or you see sort of on the news or whatever. And it is a reminder that for so much of the country, like, you know, they do love it. And yeah, that little thing that the Mason Mount that's been filmed, and I'd encourage everyone to see it, because you'd have to have a heart of stone not to sort of smile at that, because she looks like she's going to explode with joy. And as I say, it seemed nice to me that, you know, the makeup of the crowd, and I think it is maybe something to do with the fact that they've just had to sell the tickets all a bit last minute, and so it's ended up a bit more random. But yeah, long may continue.
I noticed that, John, just as a female, I guess, watching the game, you know, most environments I'm in are very welcoming, and I didn't really experience too much, you know, feeling like I'm on my own. But actually, I watched the game and I saw so many like young women in the crowd, and I thought, I'm not really that used to seeing that when the camera's panning around and they're all going mad. So for me, it was actually quite nice to see that on the telly, and it's good to kind of, it got me thinking. I think you need to, do we need to be doing something to get more women in the game? Because now that I think about it, it's not something I see as often with Liverpool, well, I'd say.
I mean, this is a wider thing, but it's the closed shop element, isn't it? That sort of goes to that. And that's why I made the point on the England thing is that, sorry, my boyfriend was like that. That's why I made the point on the England thing was, is it because they've had to sell a bit differently that you do end up with a bit more of a sort of, you know, a diverse makeup?
It's good, isn't it, Mike, to hear from Sian and John there about some positivity, but equally we do know that the way the media works, you know, they will always focus on a negative or on any hint of conflict and stuff like that. And look, you know, there is so I stress the word some here because we've all just been quite positive about it all. But there are still some supporters who are balanced. You know, you've got booing of opponents' anthems, which is a bit weird. And then you've got the laser pen, which on Kasper Schmeichel's face when he's trying to save a penalty. UEFA's now opened disciplinary proceedings against England regarding that. I mean, it's a minority. It's one person, perhaps with the laser pen, for instance. And we end up talking about this person, but it's just always a bit shit, that, isn't it? It's like, you know that'll end up top of the news now, that someone did that, rather than the type of stuff that Sean and John are talking about.
Yeah, I mean, we've sort of seen it ourselves, haven't we, with the poor fans going abroad and stuff like that. And when there's, it was a Barcelona only the year when there was the incident with the fountain and everyone's making it out and turning it out to be something that that it wasn't, like just a divvy, simple as that. And to me anyway, over the years, there's definitely been more of that with England than like I'd want to ever be involved in. But it's the whole stuff about like booing the anthem and that, it's just boring. Like what are you doing? Like, it's not really like a club thing where, you know,
no,
it's not a club thing where people will come and boo and or turn their backs on
apart from Everton coming,
you'll
come
never walk alone.
Apart from Everton, they come to Anfield and all the way around to get their asses out.
I've always thought of international footy as almost like a different sport.
Yeah, it is.
So in that circumstance, I kind of think like, you know, we've got no beef with the Danes. they box off Boss Bacon for us. And then they come, you know, their players come here and we're booing their anthem. Like, they must be like, knobheads.
This tournament, like, I'm not Scottish, I don't think, in any way, shape or form, unless I do them one of them DNA tests, which I really want to do just in case. But, I had a real affinity with them just celebrating and supporting it because, like, they just got behind the team. There was no our arseness, and they were just made up to be there, and you know their anthem went off every single time, and to be honest, that like the England Scotland game, I was like, wow, that's mad, they've proper outsung them, and like the all game they were going, and they just want to be there and have a good time. That's what football is to me. You want to be with your mates, have a good time, enjoy it. If you win, it's happy days, and you know you carry on, and if you lose, then you go, well next game then. That's sort of it for me, and that's not what England's been like as I've grown up. England supporting has always been a weird sport of someone wanting to, like, do you remember the whole Beckham thing? And lots of things years ago where they're singling out of people, and it's like, I can't be arsed with that sport of like making a show out of someone just because England didn't win a game, or booing and fight, singing songs about a world war. That's like 60 years ago, 70 years ago, that 25 to 35 year old lads who were singing it had nothing to do with. It's like, come on, just go and watch the game. You've got boss lads in front of you on the pitch, you know?
Yeah, I did think when they won last night that, you know, there was a lot of plastic chairs breathing a sigh of relief, but we'll see. What's your prediction for Sunday, Mike, score-wise? Let's go round the table on that one.
I think Italy will probably shade it 2-1, maybe 3-1 if England start proper going for it and trying to get back. I think Italy would be a bit too streetwise for England.
Normal time as well?
Probably, yeah. But I think England needed to go to extra time, to be honest. So I don't think they'd be too bothered if it does. Because, like, I was talking last night to friends of the show, Siobhan and Lizzie and that. And we were saying, like, as Siobhan said as well, like, I'll look at England's depth. The bench, come off the bench, is ridiculous players. Like, I know Italy are good
as well.
Yeah, so, and sub the sub and stuff like that. And, I like, I would like Italy to win it, you know, just not like out of any bitter reasons or horrible, like, oh, I'm made up for like English players losing it, but I don't know what it is. I think Chiellini got me the other day where he wants it that much. I just want Italy just to nick it.
So you're saying 2-1?
2-1 Italy, yeah.
2-1, okay, Sean?
I reckon it'll be 0-0. I think we'll see a really cagey game, and I think it'll come down to depth and maybe legs, and I do think England looks like they've got a bit more legs in them than Italy, and I do reckon England are going to nick it in extra time and 1-0.
Okay, John?
I was thinking 1-0 Italy. I think Italy are like a step above everyone else who England have played in this tournament. So I don't really buy in that, oh, they've had an easy run and blah, blah, blah. You play, do you know what I mean? But I think Italy are a step up from everyone who they have faced so far, and I think we'll have a sort of a little bit too much. I think the extra day's rest will help as well. And look, that's the luck of the draw, isn't it, with these things? You play when you play and who you play. But I think, you know, that game, not just, you know, the extra time and all that, but the emotional of it will have sort of taken it out of them. And both teams, to be fair, but Italy have just got that extra day recovery. So I think we'll have a little bit too much, but I am looking forward to it, the final. Like, I'm looking forward to watching.
Yeah, it'd be good. I think we're all going to watch it, aren't we? And but then Monday, the Reds are back in training and the real stuff starts. So we'll talk about that after the middle stuff, which was promised earlier. Rishi and Sanjay on the way, and then back with the panel talking about the mighty Reds.
And it is John Gibbons for the weekend. I'm delighted to be joined over Zoom by Rishi Jain, who is the new Senior Equality, Diversity and Inclusion Manager at Liverpool. I was going to say, Rishi, like Bobby Fowler, you're returning to Liverpool because you've worked for the club before, but it must be nice to be back in a really exciting role.
Definitely, John. I think it's always nice to sort of return home, as a lot of people have put it, and I think the Bobby Fowler analogy is much better than some of the others. But you know what? It's a fantastic opportunity. At the end of the day, this is the team that support the city that I've been a part of for pretty much my entire life, and it's a great opportunity for me to really make a difference with the communities that the club's really looking to serve in this space.
So if you tell people a little bit more about the role, Rishi, because it sounds quite a wide role, but what kind of things does it encompass?
Well, to be honest, John, it really is. I think internally it's very much around how we look after our people, how we embed sort of equality, diversity, inclusion into absolutely everything that we do, and that's policies, it's processes, but more importantly, it's a culture piece, making sure that we have the very best people working for the club, representing the club on a daily basis. And when we have those best people, make sure we keep them and retain them and attract the best talent. Externally, it's what does Liverpool Football Club stand for? What are our values? What are our beliefs? This city, this club, it's built upon diversity, in my opinion, is what makes us so successful.
Yeah.
So we need to embrace that, and also we have a duty of care to everyone that engages with us to make sure that when they come to Anfield, when they go to games, whenever they engage with the club, that they're able to be their true selves, their true authentic selves, and that's a really big part of my role.
Absolutely, absolutely. I want to talk to you in particular about Pride then, Rishi, because it should be worth noting, first of all, that Liverpool Football Club have got a long association with Pride here in Liverpool and have been part of the celebrations. Obviously, the celebrations are going to be a little bit different this year, both in the city and Liverpool's involvement because of the ongoing COVID situation. But that's not to say that Liverpool aren't being very creative, it looks to me, and looking, you know, as part of, you know, through the Red Together and everything else, you know, to do as much as possible to support Pride and to lend the football clubs their weight behind it.
Yeah, and you hit the nail on the head. When you talk about a long association with Pride, I think we've supported for the past 9 years now. And if I remember rightly, we were one of the first club to support a UK Pride event, which is something that I look back on my first team. I'm really proud of it. It's a nice thing to do. And for me, okay, how do we move forward? How do we make sure that we continue supporting these important initiatives and charities in terms of what we're doing? As you've mentioned, obviously, LCR Pride this year was virtual. Obviously, everything is virtual at the moment. But it means that we can be creative. It means that we can get videos from our senior leaders and from our staff, from our LGBT plus network, from our LGBT plus supporters group, cop out. We can actually engage with them and get them to contribute through videos. And more importantly, get us all together to be able to really pull in the same direction around this space. And obviously LFC Foundation, which I'm sure you're familiar with, are doing some fantastic stuff around sort of football tournaments and the careers and covered events, working with the former professional rugby league player, Keegan Hurst. But at the end of the day, the Pride event is it's the flag in the sand. It's exactly what we want to be doing. It's important that we support the LGBT plus community that's on our doorstep. And in future years, we want to go even bigger and better. And if we can do it in person next year, that'll be brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. I marched with the club a couple of years ago, and it was fantastic to do it in our Liverpool colours, but also, as you say, to support the city as the inclusive place that it is. When you see someone like Jordan Henderson, Vichy, wearing rainbow laces over in the Euros, you know, what does that mean to you? What does that mean to the football club? Because we can, you know, send out the messages that we want, so we can encourage inclusivity. But Jordan, you know, is involved quite rightly around the world. And what does that mean when you see that, both to you and other people sort of, you know, within the club?
To be honest, it's fantastic to see your captain, to see your leader, to see your role model championing the rights of people who are less fortunate than him and than others. It's what you aspire to be. It is inspiring. It's exactly the type of behaviours that you want to see, not just from your captain, but from all your players. And it's great to see that. The way he speaks on social media, the way he calls out LGBT plus discrimination, the way he talks to this topic with real sort of care and credibility, it makes my job a little bit easier, for me to be honest. It's nice to have him to say that, but at the same time, it just shows how much more work we've got to do. In an ideal world, you wouldn't have to talk to these topics because people wouldn't have to hide who they really are and hide their true authentic selves. And that's actually one of the reasons why we've progressed a little bit here this year and what we're doing. We've actually brought in the Progress Pride flag. People are normally used to the sort of typical rainbow with 7 or 8 different colours on, but we've added in the new variation of that. And I've taken some advice from some of our key stakeholders. And for us, that's about being truly inclusive, about pushing the boundaries a little bit, being quite brave in terms of what we're looking to do, but making sure that we are welcoming to absolutely everyone.
Yeah, and something, a key message that I know Jordan sends out, and it's throughout the club, is the idea that anyone should feel welcome within Anfield. And that's something that, you know, we really push at the Anfield Wrap. And if we're going to say that Liverpool is a football mad city, and if we're going to call football the nation's game, which you're hearing lots at the moment, then that has to include everyone in it. And that's to include, you know, everyone feeling sort of welcome. And I know that's what the Better Together scheme, which this comes under the umbrella of, it is all about, isn't it? It's all about sort of, you know, inclusivity and whoever you are and however you identify yourself. You know, if you're a Liverpool supporter and you support the team, that you're welcome in Anfield.
Yeah, totally. Red Together, it encompasses absolutely everything that we do around equality, diversity, and inclusion. The internal work that I've mentioned, the external stuff for our supporters. But you're totally right. I think you come to Anfield, you engage with the club on our channels, an away game, tours, whatever it is. If you're a Liverpool supporter, you're part of the family. And Red Together is a really important part of that. It's about making sure that as you continue to support Liverpool, that you know you can be exactly who you want to be and be supported by your colleagues and your peers and your fellow supporters around that. It's a really important piece of work, not just for me personally, but also for the club as a whole.
Yeah. So back onto the Pride stuff, then obviously there's this virtual march. If people want to get involved, if people think that's good, I'll march around the garden, I'll march around this sort of park by me and, you know, and sort of support this message that we've been putting out there today. How do they get involved?
Really easy. Go to the LCR Pride website and you can submit a video on behalf of the club. That's a really nice way for our staff and supporters to get involved in it. And more importantly, to be honest, LCR Pride, it's one day, it's fantastic, it's a really great initiative, but be that ally, be that supporter all year round.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, this is just the start, I guess, for you. Mate, I know you're sort of very new in the role, and so this is a big thing coming up. But, you know, over the next sort of months, years, you know, we'd love to have you back in, if you don't mind, to talk about, I'm sure, lots of other things that you've got planned as well.
Yeah, of course, John. I think, as you say, week 6 at the moment, really sort of finding my feet and relearning the business. But actually, it's a fantastic football club led by fantastic people and fantastic supporters. So to be able to be a part of that and really drive forward this work, really can count myself really lucky to have this position. But we'll definitely be coming back on the show, so thank you.
Well, we're lucky to have you in the football club by the sounds of it as well. So thanks a lot, Vichy. Do come in and see us. We're only over the Strand. Come and see us and put the kettle on. Cheers. Thanks very much.
Cheers, John. Thank you.
And it is John Gibbons for the Weekender, and I'm joined over Zoom by Sanjay Bhandari, who is the chair of Kicking Out, you might know him as, but last night, very much in Wembley as England supporter. And I had to get you on, Sanj, because I was living it through you last night. You looked like you had a wonderful time. You had a fantastic seat in Wembley Stadium and a bouncing Wembley Stadium, and it looked like so much of what we've been missing over the last year or so and more. And I guess for England supporters, so much of what's been missing for lifetimes.
Yeah, it's like 18 months of emotion of the lockdown and how we've been feeling in the last 18 months coming out. And also, yeah, it's all those 25, 30, 40, 50 years. You know, I've been waiting all my life for this. I was born in 68. So I've never known England reach a final. And this is my third semi-final with England that I've been to. So it's third time lucky. Yeah. You always feel confident going in, but it's different when you're there. It's, you know, it's different as the game's going, and it was a really tense game, and I think tense atmosphere as well a little bit. But yeah, we got the right result. That's what matters.
Yeah, the pitches at the end, you know, were joyous, and you could see the obviously the celebrations in the crowd, but obviously the players as well. You know, it dawning on them that they've done something remarkable. No England team has got to a final since 1966, and they've done it. And you can say what you want about the draws and things, but they've beaten everyone in front of them, and they play in a final on Sunday. And you could see that sort of almost starting to dawn on them as they celebrated and sang in front of the supporters.
Yeah, and it's just sort of great connection between the players and the fans, I felt as well. And it's felt like that all tournament, really. Despite some of the other noises around, actually, when you're in the ground and throughout, there's been fantastic support for the team. And yeah, you know, after the Czech Republic game, after the Croatia game, after the Germany game, coming over to the fans and celebrating with the fans. And look, that's what football's about, isn't it? And you know, with your club, you know, there's a special connection between the fans and the players, and that's what saw you through that particular, you know, the 2 years of winning the Champions League and then finally winning the Championship. And it's a very, very similar kind of feeling, I think, for England fans, that we've waited so long to see something like this. And, you know, with my club, I went through it earlier in my life as well, where we had the same kind of, you know, a long period without that one trophy that you're really after. So, yeah, hopefully it will just be a case of enjoying it on Sunday and obviously wanting to win, but just getting to the final is an enormous success.
In terms of the crowd, though, we had a bit of a chat about it in sort of part one about it felt to me and I'm only going on who the camera chooses to pan to, but it felt to me to be a different makeup to an England crowd than there's maybe been in the past. And I don't know whether that's, and I sort of wildly speculated that it might be because they've had to sort of sell the tickets quite late, so it's been sort of, you know, a bit more open than maybe how they've sort of sold it in the past. I don't know, but as you said before, this is the third semi-final you've been to. Do you think it felt like a different sort of England crowd in this one than maybe it has been in the past?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, not 96, 20, 25 years ago felt like a very different crowd, not as sort of diverse, really. As you saw, you said go around that stadium, you know, people, different races, men and women. It was very different in 96, probably a bit more white and male dominated. I certainly recall that there not being quite so many folks like me in the crowd when I was there then. You know, 2018 was slightly different, obviously, because it was in Russia, and so it's the fans that can travel. But yeah, it definitely feels like a kind of the crowd and the team matching each other. You know, the team is everything that modern England is, and the fans in the stadium seem to represent that.
You see, the team is everything that modern England is, and they also seem to embrace that about themselves as well. And that's what I've found particularly impressive, is that there's different ways of seeing yourself as a role model, and some players have refused to accept that they are one. You know, I've just got a job and I can understand that viewpoint. And then others have reluctantly accepted the role model mantra, whereas this group of players seem to embrace it and have actually tried to use their position and use their status to try and achieve some positive change in the society they live in, and I would argue are succeeding with their feet and their words and their minds. That must be, you know, incredible for you as somebody who's been an England fan for so long, but also obviously in your professional life to see sort of what these players are doing and achieving.
Yeah, it's incredible, and led by an incredible coach, you know, in terms of leadership. you know, Gareth Southgate, that thing he wrote before the tournament, you know, he's kind of the leader that our country needs. And really focusing on trying to bring the country together rather than dividing us, but actually focusing on the things that we have in common. And the team is something that we have in common. And, you know, having lived through Euro 96 and the Olympics in 2012, and I know that this country is amazing when we have a big sporting event and we really can get behind the team. And yeah, you're right, the players, you know, they stand up for what they believe in, not just the issues around tackling racism and other forms of discrimination, but, you know, the kinds of things that Marcus was doing around food poverty. And look, it's players like Marcus and Jordan Henderson has been a fantastic leader over the last year or two. Some of the things, you know, leading the support for the players with the NHS at the start of the pandemic, and Raheem Sterling with all the amazing work he does. So, yeah, it's great to see the players using their platform, and that's where social media really helps, because they've got a direct link. They're not reliant on conventional media to convey the message. They can do it themselves in their own words, in the way in which they want to do it, which is kind of changed the game, really.
You mentioned there about, you know, other forms of discrimination as well. And that's, you know, we're talking about a little bit more, because I saw a tweet a week or so ago, and I saw it because Jordan Henderson quote tweeted it about a young England fan who went to a game in makeup. And I think he's he, I think he identifies as he, yeah. Went in makeup, and he's been an England fan for a long time, and has been a match-going England fan for a long time, but said about, used the word butching up, which he says he's felt the need to do in the past, but just woke up that morning and thought, sod it, and put my makeup on, and was really touched, really, about the positive reaction that he got. And it's interesting, isn't it? And I guess what it says to me is, do people like me, Sanjay, need to a sort of change our perceptions of what we think sort of England fans are, really? Because we're getting a lot thrown in our faces. Our faces sounds awful. We're getting presented with a lot of evidence to the contrary.
Well, I think I'll quote a British hero, right? So Winston Churchill said that minds are like parachutes. They work best when they're open, right? And so just be open-minded. You know, anyone can do anything they want, and anyone could support England. It should be, football should be a game for all. And yeah, that's one of the reasons why I'm so proud of people like Jordan Henderson doing exactly what he did, and Harry Kane and the FA supporting us with wearing the rainbow armband, you know, at a time when this has become controversial with what happened in Hungary, actually making a stand and saying, no, that's the right thing to do. So yeah, it's there are all sorts of other things that are going on in football and in society and in life that create division, and so it's brilliant to use the platform of football to bring people together, because, you know, in that moment when you celebrate a goal, you know, I don't care who I'm hugging next to me, they're getting a hug whether they like it or not.
absolutely. I mean, these footballers have already achieved so much. They've changed the tune of a few politicians, I've noticed. who were quite happy to see them booed before the game, but are now posing with their England shirts, which shows the power of football, I guess. I mean, how, if they do win it on Sunday, and it's a big if, but even if they don't, I guess, how much, you know, positive change can we expect football to have? How much, you know, positive change do we feel like these group of footballers have, and how much is it sort of, you know, almost kind of, you know, fair to ask of them, really? But it does feel a little bit different this time to me, slightly sort of on the outside, that it does feel like, you know, if they are to win it on Sunday especially, then we could have a similar sort of impact than what the French talk about in terms of France 98 and that brilliantly talented multicultural squad and winning that World Cup.
Yeah, I think it could have an enormous, enormous impact. Also because of the timing as well, you know, we're coming out of lockdown and there's that, you know, this could really create the little boost that we all need as we're going back towards normal life, and make everyone feel really positive. So yeah, and it of course it could have that kind of impact on what we see as Englishness, what we see as Britishness, what we see as national pride. And, you know, pride's all about, and patriotism is all about context. It's about what you say in what context. And actually, I think what they're doing is redefining patriotism. And hopefully, you know, in some ways, yes, I get slightly irritated when the when people who are never really interested in football suddenly become interested in football to hook their political beliefs on, or to ride a wave and jump on a bandwagon. But in some ways, it's a good sign, because you know they don't do that unless they recognise the power of football. That's the reason why they're jumping on the bandwagon. There is no bandwagon to jump on unless we're powerful and successful. And the reality is, it is powerful as a platform. And the reality is also, it's up to the you know, the players. We're not, in a way, we're not really asking them to do anything they don't want to do. A lot of this stuff is led by them. So actually, it's much more of a collaborative effort where we and others are talking to the players, and really they're taking the lead, and we're enabling them and advising them on, here are some good ways to do things, and here are some ways that we can help to drive the change in society that we need.
Absolutely. Well, good luck with getting a ticket on Sunday. If anyone's got any spares, it's at Sanjay Kicking Out on Twitter. Do slide into his DMs. I'm sure you'd be really pleased. But Sanj, thanks so much for joining us today, and thanks so much for sharing your experience last night. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for inviting me, and good luck next season.
All right. Thanks to everyone there. Back with the crew then, and we're talking about the Reds as promised. Monday, training starts with Jurgen Klopp expected to be welcoming back 27 players for initial tests and exercises, etc. We still don't know what they're doing, though, pre-season-wise. We were talking about this in an Anfield Wrap meeting before. We'd love to know so we can plan out what we're doing, but we'd love to know because we want to watch the Reds as well. Rangers has been mentioned, but when, we don't know. Villa and Newcastle have also been mentioned as possibilities. There's even talk of Osasuna and a game against them, which would serve as a tribute to former player Michael Robinson. There's talk that two friendlies could be at Anfield, and an away match to Tranmere Rovers has also been mentioned, but no one actually knows. So yeah, it'd be nice if we knew, wouldn't it, Mike?
Yeah, I'm mainly interested in Tranmere because we got the ferry over the other week to meet to do a Glen Africa AFQ.
Oh yeah,
and it was a lovely little ferry ride. So you know, I'm all in for a ferry ride over, and you know, go and watch the Reds absolutely wallop Tranmere 4-0 in a pre-season friendly. I'm you know. That's all I'm in.
Rangers are there at the weekend, you know. We could just go to that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting, isn't it?
Go and see Stevie.
Go and see Stevie, yeah. We're Stevie's mates, let us in. yeah. I think the whole thing with not knowing who we've got and whatever, yeah, I don't think they'll be that concerned as long as there's games, in quotation marks, like at least maybe once a week, maybe twice a week. I think Klopp will do what he always does in terms of absolutely getting them as fit as possible. We've just had a mad long season though, and like a game every 3 days and stuff like that, and I think we're one of the latest teams back. I think Leeds have already been back about 10 days or so.
Yeah.
So maybe that's already a part of his planning, like, well, we'll get everyone back who's not been to Euros, give them a little bit of an extra break, but they know what they're coming in for. They're going to get absolutely beasted. We want to be fifth for Norwich. We don't want to start like with a draw. We want to win, start flying. So I think that's what, I think Klopp has majorly concentrated on just getting the fitness levels to where it is. The games are there, and they're important, but they're not the be-all and end-all of pre-season.
Do you think they'll all be walking in on Monday, Sean, saying, fuck's sake, James Milner's going to win all these tests again?
I think, you know, from the friendlies aside, I think there's a bit of a puzzle in the next few weeks, and that I don't think it's dead on that we're going to even sign anyone else, and I think it really depends on what's happening with quite a lot of fringe players, actually. You know, a few weeks ago, there was all the talk about Phillips, then Williams. That's kind of died down a bit now. So I think that's all going to come to the fore in the next few weeks. And then you've also got, I don't think the club have confirmed this, but I've seen a few things flying about that he's going to give the players who've been in the tournament a proper 3 weeks off. So it's quite possible we're going to be without a lot of the first team for the first team for the first game of the season. So that's going to mount pressure if we haven't signed anyone, and the closer we get to that first game of the season, and we know we are maybe relying on some of the fringe players that are still there. You know, I think there'll be what used to be the Virgil van Dijk video they used to whip out all the time. I think Kanate, they'll be hammering, thinking, look at this one we've signed, like, he's coming in.
I can't wait to see him walking into a Kirby with his fireworks, by the way.
He's going to be on the carpet with all the
just
players,
the crew of lads with him. Yeah. Who've permanently got pyro for every small thing that he's won an addict.
So yeah, it's interesting to see how the transfers fold out, because I really do think it depends on what's happening with them fringe players.
Yeah, it feels like transfers might ramp up, doesn't it, John? I mean, we obviously got Konate in, but everything else has been quiet, but it's been pretty quiet for everyone, really. It feels like everyone's waiting for the Euros to be done, and then Monday we could be dead busy talking about three new players. Probably not, but you know.
Well, Rob Governor certainly hopes so, doesn't he? Loves it for the gutter show. But I think generally speaking, you know, we'd all like, you know, one or two more in at least, and good ones who can sort of, you know, certainly contribute from the off next season. And so let's hope that happens. I agree with Sean in that, you know, the level of those players probably does depend a little bit, you know, on what they're sort of able to bring in. But I'd like to think that they'd be able to do a little bit at least, you know, regardless, because I think it's a big season for Liverpool, and I think we could do really well. Obviously, with the players come back from injury, you know, we're all that excited. I think there's going to be a lot of people with eyes on Monday morning and the training pitches to see how, you know, Verge is going, how sort of, you know, with the Joe Gomez is knocking about, and sort of a few others as well, really. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of eyes on us pre-season when they do announce the games, and seeing sort of how fit, you know, some of these lads are looking, because we're all hoping that, you know, Verge especially is absolutely raring to go against Norwich.
Mike, stop me when you know what I'm talking about, right? You ready? Crafted in stone, inspired by the famous architecture. It epitomises the rich history of Liverpool, a city born through graft and hard work that's celebrated through its unique style and love of high-end fashion. It's the away kit, Mike.
I thought you were talking about Kearney himself.
They have actually said all that. Yeah, see, it goes on, but we'll leave it there. But yeah, there's loads of bump around why the new away kit looks what it looks like. It is a nod back to kits of old of the 96-97 season. If you haven't seen it, it's got a bit of a vibe of a polo you might wear on a night out. There's a bit of green, there's a bit of white, there's a bit of... I mean, is it green? Teal, I think they call it, don't they? But what do you reckon, Mike? Is it for you? You're not asked? Where are you on kits these days and the new one that's just come out?
I'm not going to be rushing out to buy it, like, but like that's been the case since I was about 12, 13, to be honest. It's a...
You'd need a fucking mortgage if you did want to buy it. It's £175.85 if you wanted to get the full kit as an adult male or... an adult woman.
You see, even for five aside, that's a bit hard. That's a bit of a graft. That for five aside, isn't it? Like, just that's mad. But as is the way of the world in football these days, I was sort of saying to Sean before we started, I just wish that some, like, all this bump that you've just read out there, I wish some fella would just go, yes, yeah, the kid, lad. Here's the kit.
Nice, isn't it?
Green on it, isn't it?
Sound in it. So they'll wear that when they're away.
Yeah. They'll wear that. Here's the training kit as well. Get involved in them shorts, because I think that's like the hallmark of Scouse, when you see fellas walking around wearing the training shorts because they've got zips on them.
Yeah, good pockets. Like, in.
Yeah, good pockets on the training shorts and that. I think that's where my kit...
It's made as well, Mike, from recycled plastic bottles.
Happy days, saving the world, mate. saving the world as we look good in... carved out of stone green or whatever it was called. all the colour names are boss as well, aren't they? Like, remember Toxic Thunder?
Yeah.
I'm into them. Like, I want to know what the green's called. Like, some sort of luminous holiday green or something like that.
Well, I'm going to continue to sow Grinch into the show, and I'm going to say, Sean, that I've been looking at the prices and also the idea of stadium and match kit. Are you aware of this?
Yeah, so like the players have like the proper professional ones.
So the players have match and like us plebs, we can opt to have stadium. But even if you, Sean, went for stadium just for the shirt, it'd be £70 or 5p short. If you went match, it's £100.
Well,
just for the shirt.
No discount for the legacy tops now. yeah, it's mad. It probably goes to show why you don't see that many people wearing it at Anfield. But yeah, it's nice. I mean, I don't buy them, I don't wear them, but they're nice to look at. They always look a lot better on the players once they start wearing them. What I quite like is, what are they calling that, like off-white ecru, is it?
Yeah.
I think the last one we had was 94, which I would have only been 4 years old.
Right.
Sorry to rub it in. So I've never really lived through a nice ecru kit. I've been through some horrible away kits. I do quite like yellow. I do quite like that being a classic away colour for Liverpool. But yeah, I'm quite into the ecru.
John as well. If you're going for the full kit, mate, it's £7.50 for your name, £7.50 for a number, and a fiver if you want the Premier League badge on it as well. So £200 for the full it.
I mean, I suppose if I'm paying a oneer for the top, I'll do an extra tenner for both badges. I suppose in for a penny and all that. It is a lot, isn't it? And yeah. I think, you know, it's frustrating, really, that, you know, it sort of, you know, feels like it sort of has to be that much. And I'm sure they, you know, if they were here, they'd talk about the design that goes into them and stuff like that. But it just does feel like, you know, a lot of money. And I know for parents as well, who've maybe got sort of two kids and, you know, they want the one that the footballers wear and stuff like that, you know, having to have those conversations around where you're going to have to wait, you know, for one of them or both of them or whatever, sort of birthdays and Christmas can be sort of quite hard to do, really. So I'd rather there wasn't two different ones for that reason, really, because I think the kids will always want, you know, the one that the sort of...
Are we doing three new kits a year now? Are we doing a third kit as well?
Yeah.
So I remember when I was growing up, it was like the home one every other year.
Yeah,
home one in the middle. Yeah. So like that felt like, why don't you just sort of do that again, but
then they're bringing out, what was that one you did last season? It was looked like a bit like a baseball top. That was like an extra one thrown in. It's like
a training one.
Or like a polo or something.
Yeah,
there's all kinds of things. I mean, there is a baby kit, which is £39.95, and an infant kit, which is £44.95. But they then come with the issues, I think, that John's touching on, in that they've got slightly different collars and stuff like that. And once the kid's old enough, they'll be like, hang on, Dad, you got me a Jag one? Tradition Daisy. So yeah, it is a bit of a mind. I just kind of wish, and I know it's never going to happen, but I'd love Liverpool to just put the kits out 1 year and they were way cheaper than everyone else's, and they just went, we're going to start the trend back the other way because this is not fair. It all feels a bit tax on loyalty and all that kind of thing. And I know people are saying you haven't got your arm up your back and you've got to buy them, but perhaps a lot of people who are saying that haven't got kids. Anyway, we'll move on, and we'll move on to something positive and quality that we all enjoyed this week, which is Konate doing what looked like his own number reveal amid Pyro and friends. He is number 5. That has now been confirmed by the club. The number previously held by Genie, also in the Premier League era, held by Aga, Barros, Staunton and Mark Wright. Mike, what did you think of his little private party? What I'd love to know is, like, what was happening? Did he just decide to do that? Did he speak to the club? Did he just go, I'm going to do my own reveal? Like, what, you know what I mean? He seems a bit mad and a bit maverick, doesn't he?
I reckon he's been knocking around in his kit. You know, I think, to me, it looks like he's just genuinely made up to be a Liverpool player.
Oh, you know?
And everyone that's, you know, in and around him is genuinely happy for him. So all his mates there, or his family and his mates, and that, they're made up for him. So, like, go ahead, lad. I, you know what I mean? Like, I'd be that happy to be playing for Liverpool Football Club. So I'm sort of happy for him, you know, knock yourself out. As long as you're sound on the pitch and that, no one's going to be having a complaint about you having enjoying being a Liverpool player. So for me, like, just as I said, it's nice to see someone so excited to play for Liverpool. Like, that's all.
Is he leaving himself anywhere to go? Imagine he wouldn't leave.
full on bodysuit.
That's the only thing with it. What did you make of his little vid that leaked? It was a good one, Sean.
Yeah, boss, we were saying before, it's like the new gender reveal party, but for your new number with the players. And you should just get him to do the kit reveal with loads of pyros. That'll be better than
all them lads.
I know where he goes pyro from. Like, I'm into just having a pyro going off and a walk in the living room now and again. That's essentially what he's doing.
I was laughing though, because I've been up to Anfield today. It was the women's team media day where they were all in the new kit and you could have a bit of a chat with them, and I had to fill in some paperwork to go up there, and they were asking for like a risk assessment and all this, and I'm thinking, I'm only going up with the bubble mic on my mobile phone, and so I was jumping through all these hoops to go and do that, and then I go onto Twitter and I see Konate and all his mates
set back.
And I was like, I'd love to see Konate's risk assessment for that later.
John, any favourite number fives that have played for the Reds?
I did like Mark Wright, actually, back in the day. Obviously, he did some really good swearing, which I'm sure you like when he lifted the FA
you
Cup.
You fucking beauty.
Exactly, yeah. There we are. I didn't mind Milan Baros, but I didn't approve of him being a number five. Really.
Oh, it's a weird number for a forward,
yeah,
then, isn't
it? But I did like Mark Wright back in the day. 92 Cup final, I was 10 and enjoyed that one. I thought he was a good player, a bit unlucky with injuries in later years.
I'll do you a few more, Mike and Sian just say, because someone somewhere right now is going, my God, he only said the Premier League. So as I said, Wijnaldum, Agger, Barros, Staunton, Mark Wright, Jamie Redknapp, Torben Picnic, Water for a bit. Thankfully, only a bit. Harkness, Ronnie Rosenthal, McManaman had it for a while. Whelan, Jan Mulby, Mike Marsh, Gary Ablett, Glenn Hussein, Barry Venison, Gary Gillespie, Spachman, Dernan, Craig Johnston, John Walk, Sammy Lee, Steve Nichol, Alan Hansen, Beglin, Thompson, Lawrenson, Sheedy, Kevin Sheedy, Ray Kennedy, Alan Kennedy, Fairclough, Avi Cohen, Jimmy Case, Tommy Smith, Brian Orr, Peter Cormack.
Fairclough was a five.
All of these have had five. I'm not saying...
Oh, because it was different back. Like, yeah. Whatever you started, basically, it was your number, wasn't it?
Any favourite fives?
The one that's just left me, he's got me half forever, Gini Wijnaldum. What can you say about the fella? Absolute smile on his face all the time. But like an artist, it was made up to be playing for the Reds and won it all.
At least they've brought in another Sam fella.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It seems.
So... That's I'm on board with that. I'll miss Gini. I think we could have got another year out of him, maybe two. But he's going to be some number five to live up to. And there's obviously a few in there that are like Hansen. Come on, all the oldies there. Absolute loving the legends at number five on the back. But for me, the best one that I've seen was literally the one that we've just had.
What about you, Sian?
I think I've only been alive to watch three out of that list. Sorry to depress
you. You didn't miss much with Torben Picnic.
same for Gini. Absolutely love him, and it just killed me a bit inside watching him at the Euros because I hadn't really processed it. I was like, oh, it's fine. We'll get someone else in. We've got a boss team. And then, yeah, just seeing him put in some shifts for the Netherlands did hurt me a bit. But yeah, I think fond memories of Barros won the Champions League. Great. What more can you ask for? But yeah, a bit of a mad number for that position. And same with Agger. He absolutely loves Liverpool, doesn't he? So yeah. He's going on about Liverpool. He's got like, you'll never walk alone on his knuckles, yeah. Hasn't he? I think it should stand him in good stead. Good number.
And John, of course, it's Barry Venison for you, isn't it, mate?
Absolutely. Had the hair and the jackets and everything.
Pink suits and all kinds. Fair play to him. No one else could pull that gear off. All right, well, that's been the Weekender from the Anfield Wrap. Thanks to everyone in the studio. Thanks to everyone who come on as a guest. Enjoy this weekend, whatever your stance is on England. We'll be back next week with much more from the Anfield Wrap. Up the Reds. Sports Social Podcast Network.